Join Johannes, a necromancer of some little infamy, and his charismatic brother Horst in the many adventures of the Cabal Brothers on the Necromancer's Deathcast. From circuses to dreamlands in turn-of-the-century Never Never England, author Jonathan L. Howard brings his dry wit and exceptionally clever writing to this series of the most intense and tumultuous proportions. Rise up, all ye undead, and rejoice in the wonder that is the Necromancer's Deathcast.
Welcome to the Necromancer's Deathcast, brought to you by Free Flow Rambling. This is episode 3.7, Tempest Fugit, where we are discussing the book Johannes Cabal, The Necromancer. My name is Tanzin, and I am joined by Amber.
Hello.
And Jess.
Hello.
Chapter 7. The Brothers' Carnival makes a stop at the next town, which they find being evacuated due to the oncoming Maleficarian army. Johannes recognizes the culprits, and the two vow to put a stop to the mayhem. Johannes confronts Rufus Maleficarus, only to be thrown into a pocket universe devoid of time. He manages to make his way back to reality and stops Rufus. Chapter 7, in which Cabal discovers that hell comes in different flavors and that one should always make time.
I think you should try to say Maleficarian army fast 5 times. See how that works.
Maleficarian. Maleficarian.
No, the army. The Maleficarian army.
Maleficarian army. Nope.
Yeah, see, it's impossible. Nice.
So, I'm going to say it very slowly, and then in post, can you just make it sound like I did it really fast?
Speed it up, slow it down. The magic of audio.
It'll just be really high pitched.
Say, let's auto tune our podcast.
I like it.
So Johannes and Horst are playing chess while waiting for a signal, keeping them from making their final stop. The two decide to investigate.
Yes, and upon exploration, they find a town completely in turmoil and chaos, people clamoring to leave however they can. I think my favorite part in the beginning here is Cabal hadn't time for social justice regarding the women and children first. All he could see were potential souls skipping town as everyone's doing an exodus. You know, I thought that was funny. Mm-hmm. He has no time for social justice.
Well, because he literally walks upon a man ripping people from their seats in the carriage so that he can have a turn.
Right? He's like,
yeah, oh well.
Yeah.
More to the point, why are you leaving? I could have your soul.
Your soul is mine. I don't care about your seat.
I liked that one part. Cabal makes a path through the crowd to find out what's happening, and he made his way through the group, cracking skulls with his death head cane and hacking at shins with his feet. After the first few cries of pain, a path magically opened.
Funny how that works.
Even before that, there's a moment. It says, after a moment, Horst joined Cabal, and he says, I shouldn't have done that, but he was just so infuriating. And this is in regards to the dude, like, hoisting the kids and the women off the train. I hope I haven't hurt him. I thought this was an interesting juxtaposition, like Horst's empathy in an interesting contrast to Cabal's skull-cracking approach of indifference or annoyance. Yeah. You know?
That is quite the difference.
Yeah, it's like when Horst, you know, beats someone down, it's because, you know, and he generally shows remorse, but like, dude deserved it. He was a D-bag, right?
Right.
But,
and generally, I don't think he realizes his own strength quite yet, because he's launching these people.
Literally. And Cabal even says, like, you'll have to ask when he lands. Like, it's not coming anytime soon.
Totally.
Well, the two brothers come across the official, and that's how they find out, like, there's an army coming.
Right.
Everyone's upset and frightened and getting out of town ASAP.
ASAP. Stat.
Stat. I was trying to say both.
ASTAT. Yeah, ASTAT. That should be a thing. I think we can make it a thing.
As stat as possible.
Yeah, some of the evacuees realize that Cabal has a train and leave and attempts to abort it.
Oh my god, and this quote. You're familiar with the theory of evolution? They're about to find out why intelligence is a survival trait. As he's talking about the people trying to clamor on the train. Yeah.
Good luck on there.
Yeah, like you've got a train full of what necromantized creatures and, right. You know.
Creatures made by diabolical Satan blood.
Right?
Like, yeah, have fun.
Yeah. Go ahead. Try to take that seat.
Just first of all, anyone who's agreed to work under Johannes Cabal is already questionable at best.
Absolutely. Do you really want to steal that demon's seat?
Yeah.
Or attempt to do so. Yeah.
So it quickly becomes, you know, at the end of last chapter, we had this announcement. There has been a break in the asylum. And there has been a breach of the asylum that was generously acted upon and is now out here in the real world causing havoc, which is what everyone is obviously upset and afraid of. And Johannes Cabal doesn't have any time for that at all. So he's very eager to be like, that's fine, I'll solve this, as long as you guys stay here.
Yes, these were the escapees of the Brichester Asylum.
Yes.
And yes, here's where we get the, I love this. He's told of, exactly as you say, he's told about the crowd, or the Maleficarian army. Not that they know what that is at this point, but... this is an army of lunatics. Fancy. There's a football match on then.
So I made note of that one too.
That's so funny. So, Jonathan L. Howard, what do you really think about sports?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
He's got a few different varying opinions. It depends on the sport.
Right? A lot of hooliganism in
it. Yeah.
His versions, anyway. But yes, Rufus Maleficarus, quote-unquote wanker, is what I put down.
Yeah. Self-styled warlock and great beast. Actually, rather a, what's the term?
Wanker.
Aww.
Yes, his dark gods obviously have their standards. They gave him a few party tricks and cut him loose.
Ooh. Deja vu. I like that part.
Right.
Horst always just has to get a little bit of a dig in.
It's rough out there for these dark art practitioners.
Right?
It's a saturated market. Not a lot of room for growing.
It seems to me that there's danger in just learning the arcane just because of it driving one insane. Mm. Takes up the space of sanity. In your brain to be able to understand the forbidden knowledge.
Well, and when he describes the dark gods, extra cosmic entities with names that sound like they were typed up by a drunken Egyptologist.
Yeah.
I definitely feel about that, the Lovecraftian gods. Yeah, that's perfectly acceptable description of their names.
Well, here's the question. How the hell do you pronounce that? I've never heard. Like, okay, so Cthulhu? Cthulhu? No. Does anyone actually know how to pronounce that beast?
I always thought it was Cthulhu, but
Cthulhu? I have heard 101 different variations. What do you say, Jess?
Well, I'm definitely wrong, but I just say Cthulhu.
Cthulhu? Yeah, see, it could be a ch, it could be a k, a s. The hell?
Cthulhu.
Like, where is Lovecraft? We need the definitive statement here. No? Okay.
I unless you can bring him back.
Well, could call Cabal, maybe.
He was our drunken Egyptologist.
He was right. Lovecraft was the drunken Egyptologist.
I want to point back, though.
The OG.
The point you made, Tanzan, about that quote you just had. It takes up space in your brain to learn it. It really reminds me of earlier on in the book when Johannes was saying, he's like, I didn't think I needed my soul to do any of this. And now I realize I was wrong. And I am going to actually need that back now because I've come across some new information. Apparently that is a useful piece of the body. So but it really reminds me, like earlier on, he was just like, I want to use like 100% of my brain. If that means giving up my soul, no problem. But now he's at a point where he's like, all right, wait a second. There's some other factors going on. Step it back a bit.
Shit matters here.
Yeah.
He didn't plan that very well.
No.
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 It's well, almost like laughs.
The follies of youth. The follies of youth. You don't know what you're giving up, you know, for your soul.
Exactly.
Careful. Careful, all you youngsters in the...
It's fine. There's so many of us.
Don't give up your soul.
If like 25% of us fail, it's
shiny
fine.
Trinkets and careers. Yeah. In necromancy.
But what if it's really shiny?
And what if I like to raise dead?
Dear. Well, we hope you also like carnivals.
Where's this podcast going?
So Cabal takes it upon himself to deal with the Maleficarus. I'll have a word with him and tell him to take his army of the touched elsewhere.
Army of the touched. I feel like I want to use that as like an insult next time I like go into a grocery store or something.
Yeah.
Halt, you army of the touched! No?
Why are you always bullying grocers?
I don't know.
It's true, you are.
I'm not! Grocers love me! Stop.
Get one grocer. One grocer
to agree to that. Yeah, I'll fork on that.
Forrest takes an opportunity to address the crowd, but is ignored, and Cabal uses his Webley to catch the attention required.
Yes.
Forrest vows to take down the Maleficarian army and provide a traveling show after.
And, I love this quote, directed by many grateful citizens, he had made his way through the town, lauded on all sides as some sort of hero, which was something of a turnabout given the way he was usually treated by mobs. This is Cabal. Mm-hmm. Flowers and kisses were a novel change from burning torches and lynch ropes. Not that he liked them much either.
Once again, such a bitch.
Right?
Just doesn't want to be happy.
No. No. Well, you know, mobs. What can you say about them?
Right. So outside the town, Cabal encounters the army, who is singing. Now, for those of you who have just read the book, I do highly suggest getting a copy of the audiobook, because the narrator does sing this whole song, which is absolutely fabulous. And
What's the name of the background song that he does it to?
It's the Hymn of the Republic.
That's it. Hymn of the Republic.
Yeah.
And
if you'll take a peek at our website, I found a couple of different versions sung to it. And if you're extra good,
if you talk nice to Tanzan.
I plan on making a recording of me singing.
Yes! Do it. Do it, do it, do it.
For our Patreons,
that'd
of
be
course.
So much fun. And here's the question about that song. Like, how many literary references are in it? Like, I know it's Thulu, but like... Part of me wants to go through and actually, like, I should look this shit up before I actually come on air. But, you know, like, they're talking about, oh, now I got to find the spot. How does it go? Glory, glory, it's Tulu. Something, something, something. Oh, there it is.
It's got about 3 verses to it.
Big squid head lies asleeping at the bottom of the sea. And one day when the stars are right, he'll wake up presently. And then may wipe us all out, which sounds worrying to me. While Cho-Cho sing this. Who's Cho-Cho?
That's another Lovecraft monster.
Mm-hmm. Oh, see, so this is all. This is what I thought. I'm like, I have a feeling there's.
So maybe I'll do a post on all the different Lovecraftian gods that it references.
Like Fatang. Or Fatagan. Fatagan Cthulhu. Cosmic horror coming to you. And the old ones is capitalized. So, like, obviously they're referring to.
Numerous.
A specific group of old ones. Hmm.
It's.
And
more Lovecraftian language made up words from his, like...
Oh, is it?
Prayers, rituals, chants.
Yog-Sothoth. See, there is drunken Egyptology at work. I fatag Yog-Sothoth.
This is why I haven't recorded anything yet.
Your mission, should you choose to accept it. Yeah, but is that the way you pronounce Cthulhu?
Cthulhu.
I have no idea. Don't
change
go
it
by me.
Each time.
Don't go by me on this. So yeah, I'm thinking there's lots of literary references there. You're saying that yes, it's all Lovecraftian?
Like the entire thing, it's like just people from his books or phrases from his chants and rituals. One of them is like a city from his world.
Cool.
Yeah.
There we go.
Cool.
Lots of Lovecraftian references in the entire thing.
Great.
And I can't say 100%, but I'm going to assume it's entirely Lovecraftian. I don't think they're referencing anything other than Lovecraft.
I understand this particular book has been written with influences to the Lovecraftian stuff, but some of the other stuff in the future, is influenced on different authors as well. That was from the that interview.
Mm.
JLH.
Yep.
Which I think I'll probably rewatch again at some point. So before, book some of this stuff up.
Before we book our interview with JLH?
Yeah.
Working on it, folks. Working on it.
I thought the reference to the Necronomicon the musical was quite funny. It made me think of the Evil Dead musical. They got what they deserved. Fame, fortune, money, and ripped apart by an invisible...
and decapitation!
Entity.
Yay!
Again, hate when that happens.
All in a musical. And nobody noticed.
And so Rufus and Johannes go toe-to-toe. Let's see, that's Rufus pronounced egotistical, megalomaniac, half-arsed, half-witted, half-baked. Okay, I can't even go on. I really love his insults.
Right.
They're never ending.
Yeah.
It kind of seems like the man who stands in front of his mirror every day for a pep talk. And he's just reminding himself of all the different insults that are at his disposal.
Well, and this is, I think, the first time we technically get a swear word is at the end. Ooh. Because he's Scheißkopf, which means shithead.
Yeah. Scandalous.
Yeah. It's still quite veiled because it's in German.
German.
Yeah. And Rufus is, the description of him is quite impressive. With one hell of a mane of hair and beard, and of course is ginger, wearing a tea cozy with an eye and a pyramid stitched in.
Do you know that reminded me? Okay, so a friend of mine actually made me one time. She knit me. She was practicing different things, and she was really into octopus. So she actually made like a Cthulhu hat for me. And it was a botched, she had revised a tea cozy, swear to you. That's what that reminded me of. It was like a tea cozy, and like rather than continuing with like the tea sort of spout,
yeah,
she had like knit an eyeball, a white eyeball. So like this whole hat was green with these like slug like tentacles coming down, and then this eyeball, white eyeball in the center of it. It was hilarious. I don't have it anymore, but
that's too bad.
Yeah, I was like, well, that's unique. So anyway,
yeah,
that's my weird monster Cthulhu hat.
So I have a funny moment while I was doing my notes. I have to tell the story, even though it might not be as funny in the moment, telling it now.
And then you found $20?
It might be a $20 story. Well, 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 he roared, and this was his only volume. If this isn't Johannes Gabal, the army jeered and hissed, the necromancer. The army went very quiet and tried to hide behind Rufus. Well, first point was that I really liked that the necromancer has such a despicable and feared reputation. All they had to do is say necromancer. But that whole, this was his own only volume. Because when it comes down to, it wrote down Vid Supra. And I was like, I don't know what that means.
Fast Super?
Vid Supra. And so I looked it up.
Okay.
And keep in mind, I'm sitting in a restaurant by myself. And you know how Google, when you do a look, a lookup of something. So I just put Vid Supra up and it kept on saying, see above, see above, see above. So I was like, where? I kept looking.
And so Vid Supra means see above.
See above.
You're like, but where above?
Until it hit me. And then I realized in the context of the book that it meant see above.
That's hilarious.
And so here I just bust out laughing to myself, sitting by myself and people turning to look at me when I'm
crazy,
like
crazy Tanzan,
laughing to myself.
It's kind of a who's on first scenario. What do you mean see above? That's funny.
Oh, dear.
I learned a new word. Yes, I did.
The things you learn in podcasting.
Don't forget.
Thank you, JLH, for expanding my vocabulary.
Oh, dear.
That's funny.
Yeah. I did have a little bit of a laugh when he said, you wouldn't like me when I'm angry. I'm like, okay. It was a little bit of a Hulk thing, but not quite.
Yes. You've had your warning, Cabal. Now prepare to face the terrible arcane wrath of of Maleficarus. Somewhere, a sheep bleated and quite ruined the effect.
the small details.
One of those moments that I love about JLH is that like he's so determined to keep Johannes as the main character, but also the main villain, that he goes so far as to like insult his other villains in the book. Like he's always tearing down his own villains before any of them can become impressive, because Johannes is always the number one best and worst in the book. It's like, I find, like...
That's astute, you're right.
Time and time again, as soon as he throws a villain at Johannes, he's like, but he's not quite as cool or quite as suave or quite as snarky or quite as rude or quite as ill-tempered. Like, he just, no matter what he's up against, Johannes is still number one. And he will diminish everyone else around him anyways. So
that is so true.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. I feel like I have a friend who does that.
Mm-hmm. Hi. Hi.
Oh, wait.
Hi.
Yeah.
Over here by the mic.
P.S. No one's as cool as Jess.
Truth. Pay our Patreon. I'll be your friend. You can put it in your bio that we're friends.
I'll allow it just this once.
Yeah. Highest tier Patreon level. That's friends with Jess.
That's what I'll contribute.
Friends with Jess.
You may tag me in one post.
Delusions of grandeur. Oh, excuse me.
So this is another fun part, though, is right after the, you know, JLH diminishes him and, you know, has the goat sheep bleat. And, you know, I've just gone on to say that Johannes is always number one. Instantly, Rufus gets his revenge because, you know, as Johannes is yawning and laughing him off. Oops.
Poof.
He was actually doing some shit.
Yeah.
Yes. And suddenly Cabal is transported elsewhere to a garden.
Somebody was standing above him, a sad gray man with thin gray hair plastered to his skull and eyes like failed experiments in egg poaching. Egg poaching.
Right? Who thinks of these things?
It was just such a brilliant descriptor. And I just had that image in my head. It was crossed a little bit with a horror movie, unfortunately. Poached eggs.
I just, like, it seems like JLH's, like, notes for writing books must be so strange. Like, the man is just walking down a street, and he sees something absurd, and he's like, yeah, that's how I'm going to describe someone's eye color one day. Like, just the weirdest guy. Like, I really want to know how he honestly goes day to day. Because, like, I know it's, like, a thing of authors. Like, they get a line, or they see something, or they have an idea, and they, like, write it down on a scrap piece of paper or a phone app or something like that, right? And then they move on with their life, and then maybe they'll come back to it. Maybe they won't. But I'm just so, like, JLH, like, how... He cannot just be sitting in his laptop being like, all right, how do I describe someone? Like, he's got to be walking around his world and being like, yeah.
Poached eggs. That poached looks eggs. Like some dude's eyes. Uh-huh. I'm going to describe some, like, dude's eyes like
literally,
that.
Literally. Like...
That would be fabulous if he was off the cuff like that. Just like, boom.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure he's a nice guy, but also just probably a weirdo. Because, like... Probably. Like the rest of us. But, like, probably. Yeah, some of these are just so out of left field that I'm just like... What was the inspiration? When was the inspiration?
Right? And, like, taking things to an extreme. So, like, this one line, Cabal, so he's in the garden. Cabal knew enough about croquet. He comes across a bunch of people playing, you know, garden games. Cabal knew enough about croquet to know that it is a game with undercurrents, calculating, ruthless, and with a cold-blooded desire to destroy the opposition. Not here, though. Here they were just puttering around, shunting balls through hoops. Very odd. I was like... What world do you live in where croquet is dangerous and ruthless?
Well, I believe, you know, croquet was the game that the queen was playing when she decided to, like, behead Alice, right?
Well, yeah, but yeah, I right? think...
So there you go. Clearly tensions are high, apparently.
We're presented with his odd viewpoint.
Perspective on things.
Of sports.
Well, and, like, I'm like, okay, when I played croquet, it was as a kid because there was nothing else to do while the, you know, adults were talking about stuff. So it's like, oh, here, kids, go play this. It was pretty civilized. I don't know about, you know, cold and calculating. It's just...
I don't know. I'm a little bit on the fence about this. I do feel that croquet is...
How ruthless are your garden games?
Of all sports, the most boring. But I also think that, generally speaking, garden games, first of all, are only played with, like, family. And that's obviously going to be violent. You're handing everyone a bunch of mallets.
I am never playing lawn darts with you. I'm like, what?
No, but also,
don't,
like,
ask about the family either.
However, like, as soon as he gets transported to a garden, I'm instantly, like, Alice in Wonderland vibes and, like, this never-ending time sort of time loop. And you've got to keep track of all of these weird, strange, peculiar things. And again, the Queen of Hearts, sorry. She's the one who's playing croquet when she decides it's time to behead Alice. I just feel like Like, I agree with Johannes in this case. Like, right. Croquet is a violent sport. It should be with much, it should be very energetic. Well, although in real life where we live.
He does make it a violent sport eventually.
He does.
True story. Like, yeah. There are more dangerous sports out there. Like, if you wanted, you know, rugby.
In our world, yes. But in a storybook world of any variety, croquet is vicious, yeah. Because croquet, you know, has nuances and, like, there's, like, a vibe with croquet that you're never going to get when you have football in your story. But croquet instantly sets the vibe for, like, yeah, madness at the garden.
Huh.
I'll buy that.
Yeah, okay, I'll go with it.
All right.
I'll go with it. I'll buy that for $1.
I like that the influence of Alice in Wonderland is...
For me, it's very just, yeah, like, you know...
I don't think
for
I saw
a moment,
before,
he's fallen down the rabbit hole. So, you know. Maybe, yeah, I'm just influenced by that thought. But the whole time I read this area, I was just in Wonderland with him.
Nice.
I like that.
Nice. And to go with the Wonderland theme is the Dadaism. I laughed at this when he's talking to the man, the old man with the teacup. And so the old man approaches him. Would you like a cup of tea? He asks the man again. And it goes on and on. And he says, no, thank you. I would like to know where I am, however. He had to think for a moment, then added, oh, you're in the garden. Where precisely is that? Etc., etc. Cabal had a sinking feeling that he might have been abducted by Dadaists. He tried again. No, I mean, what's beyond the garden? Maybe it's because I really like art history, but I thought that was really funny.
I didn't understand the reference. I didn't look it up, though, either.
It's more about surreality. Like, I mean, the Dadaism is different than surreality, but it's an element of it. From what I understand, the Dadaists were a movement where it was all about being deliberately obtuse, or being not deliberately obtuse, but like deliberately mucking with your perceptions of things. Right? So like the Dadaists, I heard that they had done this performance at one point where it was like, you know, they'd put on a play, someone would get shot, and then like people would get all freaked out and be like, oh my God, someone was actually shot. And like, it was sort of like this absurdist, like, is that real? Like, did somebody actually just get shot, like, on the stage? Or is this part of the play? Right? So it's sort of that idea of taking yourself out of that comfort zone of knowing what's going on.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So, like, that's... And it's sort of like... It was around that surreal Dali era of time, artistically, where people were just mucking with perception.
Yeah. So, see, that's interesting, because I did absolutely no research on that word, because when I read it, I instantly thought of Daedalus... The guy who built the labyrinth, like Greek lore guy who built the labyrinth. So for me, it was, again, this whole idea of like just being trapped somewhere and just, you know, like in a labyrinth, like stuck in the gardens, right?
Okay, now I want to do more research.
I don't know if the name came from Daedalus.
Did Daedalus inspire Dadaism?
That's because, what I'm like, wondering now, because I've never heard of the art anything ever, right? But I had known about Daedalus, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, but I always said Daedalus, I don't know.
It could be.
Right, so it's possible that's where it got its name from, but for me, I instantly was just transported to, this is the guy who built the labyrinth and was locked down there, and his son Icarus, and blah, blah, blah.
Huh.
And so that's what I was thinking of, is this whole escape from once more Wonderland, or the labyrinth, or...
Huh. Well, stay tuned to our blog, folks. We'll get to the bottom of this somehow. There is more on Dadaism and Daedalus to come.
Yeah, speaking of that, man.
Matrix, it's all connected.
Cabal asks the man about the garden, only gets the response, the garden. He had a sudden urge to punch him. Cabal succumbed to his urge. So he tries to leap through the trees, only to arrive again at the garden. He realizes this is a pocket universe and figures Rufus has hijacked this plane, and it's because it's not really his style, as he, you know, puts it, with whips and chains and whatnot.
Yes. And more interesting, too, Rufus seemed to have spent his institutional time on something other than macrame potholders. That made me laugh.
Yeah.
So instead of, you know, basket weaving 101 in the institution, here's Rufus, you know, toying with pocket dimensions. No big deal.
Yeah.
You know, this is what we do. This is what we do. Makes me wonder what is actually happening in some of these institutions.
Yeah, there was Well, there's a line right there at the beginning of that. You just said Cabal wanted to punch him. Cabal succumbed to his urges. I wish that I could be, you know, as it sound as eloquent as gentlemanly when I succumb to urges such as
losing your shit.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right.
I think you should use that, you know, next time anybody asks you. You know,
I simply succumb to my urges.
I just succumb to my urges.
Mm-hmm. It happens to the best of us. But that, it helps go into the next part.
My fist urged to be in her face. Like,
we shouldn't deny ourselves simple pleasures, okay?
Right? Of, like, smacking a bitch down. Like,
y'all remind me to tell you a story about 7-Eleven.
Okay? All right, all right.
So there's this line there, too, where I'm just... He's a little bit petulant because he's upset, like, this pocket universe is so lame. He's like, I expected it to be bigger and, you know, interesting. And on top of him, like, succumbing to his urges, like, it really just seems like Cabal's having, like, a mini temper tantrum for a minute here. He, like, realizes, like, he laughed in the face of Rufus and Rufus totally snapped him out of existence. And he's like, aw, wait, oh, that's not fair.
Hey, that didn't turn out the way it should have.
Which really, like, what was his plan? Like, I know that, like, JLH's writing style isn't to just give everything away to us, right? A lot of the time, like, even though we're with Cabal through everything, we never get to know what Cabal's exact plan, you know, like he'll run up and down the stairs and he'll lock every door, but we have no idea how he's going to actually get the blustery day bested, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like one of those things. It's like, but as far as we saw, like he really just went out into the middle of a field, crossed his arms and stood there. And then an army came up to him and snapped him out of existence. He's like, whoa, that was not my plan.
Do you think that maybe it was like an overconfidence thing?
Yeah, 100%. Like, yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, okay, I get it. Like, we don't always know Cabal's plan, but it really did seem like he was just like, I got this, guys. And then like got bitch slapped out into nowhere. And he's like,
whoops.
Fuck. I know I didn't do absolutely anything to prevent this, but in my defense, I didn't think he was capable of it. Like, that's not all on him. Not to victim blame Cabal, but like...
There was a bit of hubris there.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Absolutely. So I like this. The man with the cup of tea that Cabal punched is still waiting in the garden.
You punched me.
Yeah. And I'm like, Cabal notes the nose is now, that was broken, is now fully healed. And this line, either the nose had healed itself at incredible speed, or the man was taking stoicism to extreme lengths. No, my nose must be this way. That's how I envisioned that going. Yeah.
How long? Oh, about this long.
Right? And then who's on first scene about how long his nose is takes place, with Cabal trying to figure out how long did it take for the man's nose to heal. Well, the man attempts to measure its length. And I love this part. For the second time in a short while, Cabal felt he had no choice but to repeat an experiment and punches him again. Wait, that didn't work out. Let me try that again. All in the name of science, of course.
See, the fun thing about time loops is that you're supposed to break the time loop, right? And it really feels like all of these people here are just like, whoa, we haven't seen violence. You can't punch me in the face. All of this, like...
We never thought just, to try that.
Yeah, right? Like, it's just complete and utter disbelief. Like, it's not even anger. They're all just like, whoa.
That just happened.
It just happened again.
Right?
Yeah.
Well,
nobody told us we could do that.
Yeah. Well, with the time distortion, after a certain point, you just go, wait, did that happen?
Yeah, right? That too, like, right? Well, because even says earlier on, like, when they go to do the last hole at croquet, they don't. They go back to hole one, right?
Exactly, yeah.
So it's just, like, it's never-ending fall-into-your-pattern time loop, right? So it is very funny that, like, it's not even, like, that they're not interacting with Cabal, but that they are interacting with him, but just, like, completely perplexed at it all, right? Like,
right.
I don't know, fully drugged up on something, you know? I don't know.
And then a disruptor comes into town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, actually, this, I don't know, if you ever played We Happy Few? I don't know if I've referenced this game before, but essentially it's like this, like, World War One or World War Two, small little British town, did something horrible during the war. They can't deal with what they've done, so the entire town seals themselves off from the rest of the world, and they all start taking this drug that makes them just all be a lot happier, right? But the town has... For whatever reason, the drug is, like, making people, like, infertile or something like that, or, like, not interested in having sex. Point is, there's been no babies born for, like, a decade or more or something like that.
Is this a real thing?
It's a game.
Oh, okay.
It's a game. And so you play the game, like, if people can tell if you're not taking the drug, right? And they'll kill you if you aren't taking the drug, because everyone has to take the drug, or we're all going to go into madness from, like, the guilt we feel from what we did during the war. But if you're not taking the drug, then you see that everyone's just eating rats and not like birthday cake. But if you are taking the drug, everyone's like
eating birthday cake,
right? And the town is like pink and purple. But if you're off the drugs, you realize that the whole town is just like falling apart and horrible and like...
And like the Matrix.
So you have to play through the game. Like sometimes you take the drug and sometimes you don't take the drug because there's only certain things that you can see when you're on it and off it, right? So it's this whole thing, like, the whole town is just, like, they are so, you know, burdened with their guilt that they're all willingly drugging themselves and just, like, they all do the exact same thing every single day and everyone doesn't mind that they're just eating rats all day, every day, right?
I want to play this game.
It's a super fun game.
That does sound fun.
But, so it's, even this is a little bit, like, everyone is just, like, never mind, we've done this exact same thing for 4,000 years, just take your, I think, I don't remember what they called the drug. I was just like, have you taken your happy today or something like that? Ooh. But point is like, yeah, like everyone's just like, just nod along. It's all going to be fine.
Yes.
And then, yeah. And then as soon as somebody comes who doesn't belong, everyone's just like instant attention on them.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. It's a fun game.
It does sound fun. Yeah. I'd like to What's try that out. What's it called
again? We Happy Few.
We Happy Few. Okay.
There we go. There's plans for my birthday. Let's play games. Yeah. So the man's nose fixes itself as Cabal times the almost instant repair.
Or tries to.
And the old man says, nobody has any time here. No time at all. Right. And Cabal discovers that time simply has no relativity and starts seeking a way out.
Yeah. So Cabal starts interviewing the 20 other occupants of this pocket universe, which ends up bothering him due to the distinct lack of feeling of time. Because he thinks that it should have taken him hours to, but really just felt like moments. That would screw with you, really.
It totally, yeah.
Yeah.
And I personally have no inner clock at all. Like, I could literally be, like, at work for an hour and feel like I've done, like, a 5-hour shift. Like, really feel that way. And other times, like, I can be doing something for 5 minutes and realize, oh my god, I should have left the house 2 hours ago. I'm super late for work. Like, I'm always, like, way over and underestimating the amount of time. So especially in this kind of peculiar place. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I could literally talk to someone for like 45 minutes and think it only been a minute, right? And mm-hmm. at the same time talk to someone for 45 minutes and haven't really been 4 hours. So for a man of science like this, like, yeah, I'd be like, everything is fucked. We're never gonna be okay again.
That must particularly bother him just because of that scientific
aspect. Right,
like, and he's very staunch with things
not
like that.
Being able to record anything accurately like that, like, yeah, no.
Yeah. And he loses his shit when the architect, this old man. Sorry, did you need...
No, I was laughing at him.
Oh, yeah.
That whole part, you what? How, I wish.
How I wish I'd remembered to put the exit in.
What?
Yeah, Cabal then loses his shit, realizing that the old man is the architect who somehow forgot to include an exit in this pocket dimension's design. And he calms down somewhat to join the never-ending croquet game.
Right. There's a few games here that I wasn't really familiar with, I have to say. Like the shove hay penny.
Oh, yeah, I don't know that one.
I'm like, okay.
Is that like marbles? What?
I did appreciate the response to that fellow at the gazebo offering him to play, and he tells him to shove something else.
Well, in the croquet game, I like this quote, he eyed the ball, carefully placing his foot on it, and then smashed the vacillating man's brains out with a single powerful blow to the side of the skull.
Well played, sir. Well played.
The other players were stunned for a moment, then they applauded, uncertainly, no longer able to recall whether or not this was actually in the rules. So, yeah.
Again, Cabal has a bit of a temper tantrum. Which, this is one of those moments, too, when it's like, it sucks to be bested. But to be bested by someone like Rufus, and on top of that, like, this is kind of like the absolute perfect place to drive Cabal mad. Like, of all the hells you could send him to. A garden party time loop is just like, just an absolute, like, there's no time, there's no science, and it's fucking garden parties.
Yeah.
Lawn parties and tea. Like, the man is, and even at the beginning of this book, actually, it opens up on him playing chess with his brother, right?
Yeah.
And even then, Cabal is so, and not to say that this is just a Cabal trait, like, this is a lot of good chess players. He says at the beginning of the book, like, oh, you're bested in 3 moves, and the game ends then, because there's no reason to play it out when you know that there's only 3 potential moves to do, right? And I think it's a little bit more of that here. Like, you can't even do that with fucking lawn games, you know? Like, he's just so meticulous and so
calculating
that for, like, these stupid little games, it's like, even when he's willing to play games, it's not something as
inane.
As inane as this, you know, yeah. is just pointless, you know? He can't, it's not really a win when it's just never-ending tapping of the ball, right? So, yeah. again, once more, he just has his temper tantrum and starts bashing people in the face with a mallet.
That would have been his repetitive task that he would have been doing, is just bashing people's brains out.
You know, hey, if you had no consequences, if you had no consequences and no time, I think I'd try a few things.
Oh,
you know?
For sure. Like, if okay. my time loop was just murder all day, every day, okay, I guess this is what it's gonna be. And especially because everyone comes back to life. It's like by the time you get through like all dozen people, like the first one's back up on his feet.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the tricky thing, though. You fall into that time loop.
Totally. Let's do the time loop again. No.
It's just a jump to the left.
Into the garden. I think also, like, we see him losing his shit quite a bit. I think you were onto something in terms of, like, the being bested to be there in the first place, mm-hmm. right? Like, just that overarching sort of like, fuck.
Do you think this has something to do with him not having a soul?
Oh, good question. What do you mean?
Because if he had his soul, that he would have that moral, like a little bit of a better moral compass.
Where is he lacking a moral compass?
He seems to, in some regards, with like just the way, like the way his experiments run. Like he punches people randomly and bashes the other person's brains out when he suspects.
Let's just try something. Bash.
He's like, nope, death doesn't exist either. But he doesn't know that. So his moral compass is not, like, for the sake of the experiment, he's willing to murder somebody.
Right. It's hard to know because we didn't have enough of him before he lost his soul to really compare the two, right? Because this does just seem like Cabal's kind of just a dick, right? I mean, he shot Dennis and Denzel right off the bat at the beginning, right? And that had nothing to do with him being in a mood. Weren't they attacking him? They were trying, but they were doing a very poor job of it. A smart guy like Cabal, he did not have to resort to murder. He could have easily just been like, oh, my super rich brother is just down that road, and they would have gone wandering off, you know? Like, they weren't exactly the smartest guys on the block, right? But I think, you know, as for a soul, I would say that he is just morally wrong anyways. It's hard to know if it has to do with his soul or just him, because we don't know who he was before.
That, and his brother doesn't seem all that surprised to his behavior in some cases.
That too, yeah. His brother doesn't react. Like, there's this massive change.
Right.
I don't know. Because at the same time, like, because I don't think, like, you know, being in this place, this time loop has to do with your soul or not. Because all these other people, like, what would they have given up their soul for, right? Like, it seems like, you know, just like some guy, the architect and whatnot, and his friends came to a dinner party one day and then, oops, no exit. They never left. Kind of like one of those things, you know? So for how it affects Cabal, I'm not too sure. It might be the reason why he doesn't get as tempted into the time loop, maybe, if he doesn't have a soul with which the time loop to lap onto. Mm. Or maybe that's just Cabal not falling into the pattern. Mm. I don't know. I would like to think that his lack of a soul has an effect on the world, or him on the world, you know? Because why does he want it back so bad? But at the same time, it's hard to know exactly, because we've only ever known him like this.
Good point.
I don't know what he's wanting to become with his soul back.
Well, wanting it back, I mean, did we not establish the reason he wants it back is because it's fucking up his experiments, ultimately.
Well, but...
Not having it.
Yeah, right? But we don't know what the fucking up is, right? Like, it didn't go into specifics of, because he was creating a vacuum or something like that, right?
That the avatars were attracted... Satan's avatars were attracted to him.
Yeah.
Screwing up his experiments.
Which is, like, honestly, like... Not that big of a thing, honestly. Like, if you make a deal with Satan and then Satan's lackeys keep showing up to break your fingers for the next millennia, like, that almost seems kind of like par for the course in a way.
I see it as fuckery, though. Like, in some ways, like, okay, so if you made a deal with someone and you said, okay, look, I'm going to be the top of my profession and I'm going to give you my soul in order to do that, right? I'm going to be the best, whatever, you know, singer, songwriter, or whatever that I want to be. Now, if every time you got up to try to sing, or do something, somebody was mucking with you, or like...
Somebody in the... Suddenly the audience is always there booing.
Exactly. Like, it's sort of like, wait a sec, this wasn't the deal.
Yeah, like, it's like the genie loop.
What do you mean?
Like, every time you make a wish from a genie, they always do it in the way that fucks you the worst.
Well, exactly. So it's like, you know, I don't know if it's...
The genie loophole, I guess.
Yeah. So it's like... Okay, I gave up this thing, which obviously I've now reconsidered as something very special and important. And I mean, we do learn in later books sort of why he did give up his soul to begin with, mm-hmm. right? Like, no spoilers here, but it's... If I had made a deal with someone and then, like, that someone starts, like, throwing in little, you know, wrenches into the system, it's like, screw you. You didn't uphold your part of the deal.
I'm very 50-50 about it. On the one hand, yeah, if you're not holding up your end of the deal, then by all means, this is when we... By all means, like, you wait until if somebody fucks up your deal, then okay, great, we all get to fuck up our sides of the deal now, right? At the same time, I also think that, like, in the case of this book, too... you make a deal with Satan, you make a deal with Satan, and that means, you know, you're not making a deal with the fairest guy. You accept the consequences of your actions, you know?
Hello, Satan.
Exactly, right? And this isn't one of those books where, like, even, like, The Little Mermaid, you know, when Ariel signs the contract, even those rules seem to be a little bit more, airtight. Whereas this one, the way that the JLH presents his books is always, like, there's always a loophole somewhere, somehow, right? And it's sometimes just as much as, like, Cabal pointing out, well, your logic is stupid. Like, right? Like, sometimes he's just like, okay, that was a really good plan, but you forgot to, like, throw in a verb and you're dumb. Or, like, you know, right. Like, it's always something stupid like that, right? Where it's like, you made a deal with the devil, knowing that the devil is a manipulative bastard. You should have known that the devil maintaining his ability to be a manipulative bastard was a part of the contract, because that's who the devil is, you know?
You'd think, though, that, like, a professional like necromancy would rather endear you towards the Satan, no? Like,
honestly, yeah, you'd feel like they'd be, like, professional courtesy,
like,
right?
Like, hey, you're on my... right? We're in similar industries. Okay, let's work together, right? You know?
But I think at the same time, like, you know, fucking... lions and hyenas, you know, generally speaking, like, one is the king of the jungle and one is the scrounger, you know?
Right.
Satan doesn't have to debase himself by being friends with necromancers because he is motherfucking Satan, right?
I can raise the dead with a blink.
Yeah, every necromancer can call him up and be like, hey, buddy, let's get drinks, and, you know?
He's like, I'll pencil you in for a month from now.
Exactly, right? So, yeah. Well,
until Cabal comes knocking on his door for a chin wag and a cup of tea.
Simply isn't done.
Just because they can't. Because necromancers can call him up and pencil him in doesn't mean anyone ever tried before.
Right?
He is still intrigued by Cabal's utter gall.
Yes.
But my point is gall or not, Satan doesn't actually have to entertain him.
True story. And so, speaking of popping in for a cuppa,
would you like some tea?
Yes.
Fuck!
So he does stumble across a sundial in a place that only rains so far. Yeah. So determines that maybe time is the key to the possible escape.
Tempest is written on it. Another piece of scribbling that can't quite make out.
Yes. And so he collects a teacup, croquet mallet, a hoop, a vine, a brass disc, and essentially begins constructing a water clock.
If you're interested, I have already made a post on our website about the basic components of a water clock.
Cool.
Because I was build our own? I don't understand.
Can we build our own?
Right.
Is it a how-to?
It's not a how-to. It just shows a picture of a couple of different varieties.
I'm sure there's a second grade teacher on YouTube who tells kids how to do it.
How
for
to
daycare.
Do a water clock?
I'm
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
Let's break it down real quick, though.
The whole premise of it is that it's got assist, like you would have a system of measuring on the actual part where the water goes in, and then that's your unit of time for how long it takes to fill. In some cases, with the one that's described in the book, he fills the teacup and the teacup empties, and then it readjusts and comes back up, and that's one unit of Cabal time, as he puts that.
Yes, it's a one Cabal. I wrote that down. One Cabal chronal unit. Yeah. He's even got his own freaking units of measurement. I love it.
So it's just each time that it's
dips.
It's a movement that makes the unit of time.
Okay, I was gonna say, I was like, as far as naming him after himself, that could be again just kind of like schmarmy, dickish, but. In his defense, he already pointed out earlier, like, he could count to 60 seconds all he liked, but there was no way to know that it was actually 60 seconds. The only thing he can know is that it is his own measurement of something, right?
He has no point of reference.
I will say in that this specific case, naming it after himself is sure fine. That's fully himself. But other than that, yeah, he had no choice but to make up his own unit of measurement. That was the only way out.
Well, do you know, speaking of points of reference, that historically, one of the first clocks that came out was the sundial.
Yeah.
And when they started, you know, doing more naval exploration, they needed some sort of unit of time on the ship in order to determine latitude, longitude, where they were, how long it took to get from this place, approximately how many distance, like units that is, according to how fast the boat goes or whatever. And the problem with using a sundial is that a sundial needs to be placed in a like non-moving space, mm-hmm. right? Because it's a fixed point that the sun,
specific to where the sun is in the sky.
Exactly. Yeah, so like the sun moves around, so to speak, this mm-hmm. fixed point. Whereas like if you're in a boat, you can't judge that time because, well, if you're heading east and the sun is moving faster to the, you know,
your sun is left and right and up and down all
exactly,
the time.
Exactly. Yeah. Like you can't do that. So it was actually the invention of the water clock that enabled naval exploration because they could actually have it on the boat and like doing its thing without being a fixed point in time. So they could say, okay, you know, when we found that island, we were like Cabal's units. We were, you know, X units away. So if you keep the water clock going and it goes through, say, you know, 20 dips or 2000 dips, you're going to hit that island if you just keep going east.
Right. Okay.
So
that was interesting.
Yeah. There was a really great podcast. It's like the history of everything. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm, you know, promoting other people's podcasts here, but it was like, it's awesome. Like, and he would actually explore like a concept, like time, you know, and it was sort of like time as we understood it from like the beginning of history to now, and like the different things that we used in order to calculate and get more precise mm-hmm. on time. And like, he did a thing on like coffee. It was like the origins of coffee. And I think I mentioned that like back in the Renaissance days, because the water was so bad in like most cities, mm-hmm. they drank beer because it was like fermented and processed. So you're not going to get sick off it. And like they actually had like medical notes from doctors of that time saying like how much beer should go to each child. And so like there's something that said like the Dark Ages were actually like everybody was just pretty much drunk all the time because like
checks out,
you know, yep. And then it was with the advent of coffee coming in from like, you know, the East, and when the Silk Road and everything starts opening up and more sort of international trade, coffee comes to Europe. And suddenly the Enlightenment! People are having great new ideas and lots of motivation to do things!
Weird how that works.
I know, so that's why I'm like, see, alcohol leads to the Dark Ages, coffee leads to Enlightenment.
Sounds like our weekend.
That's my personal bias. That's my personal bias. So yes, the rain clears as the weather turns sunny.
Hmm. And I do love that the architect recognizes right away what Cabal is doing. And he's like, you fool, leave him alone. Don't you see what we've got here? It's a water clock.
Yes.
We have time. Ah.
It's a very interesting, loophole to the time loop. I really actually appreciate just the smart side of that. Like, to create time, all you had to do was just, you know, create one unit of measurement and one clock.
True.
Bada bing, bada boom. I like it. It's very simple, honestly.
You add a scientific method to the mm-hmm. to the whole thing. And so speaking of scientific, well, it's more literary, but like, I love this transition. So the rain clears as the weather turns sunny. And the quote is, time will be, the architect started to say, but Cabal stopped him. Time is, he corrected. And then it transitions to, time was when people thought they could stand against us, roared Rufus.
Oh, I missed that.
I loved that transition. Oh. I loved that transition because it's like, you know, yeah, time will be, says the architect. Cabal says, no, time is, because he's literally created it in this pocket dimension. And then we're instantly transported back to the battlefield with Rufus saying, time was when people thought they could stand against us. So I just thought that was a beautiful transition to the non-pocket dimension, like that real life sort of, you know. So, huzzah, this was great. A popcorn vendor could have made a fortune. The excitement of the Maleficarian army.
Right.
So.
Well, Rufus is bragging. Cabal makes his appearance and Rufus does a double take.
Yeah. Yeah. Cabal reappears.
You know the 8th Harry Potter movie? When Hagrid is carrying Harry and Harry's dead, and Voldemort is, like, monologuing, and then Harry just jumps out of his arms and starts shooting, and everyone's like, hey, we were letting you have a villain speech, and you didn't even kill him. It's totally like this moment here.
Yeah, and his response, yes, well, I didn't have time for it. Although, in a sense, yes, I did. About his being consigned to oblivion.
One of the annoying things here, though, too, is that, like, as we know, he didn't end up using any of Satan's blood while he was there. And as we know, he's much more about this is a scientific method and it's not magic, right? But at the same time, like, even if, like, Rufus could have kept him there long enough to just tire him out, even, you know, like, waste some of Satan's blood, use up all your spell slots, even though it's not really the same sort of thing in this, but the same idea, like, it could have been a very nice plan even then just to tire someone out, because if they're awake for days and days and days just trying to escape, and for you it's only a few seconds, right? That's a really good way to get someone at least weak, if not gone forever. But I like how, you know, even then, Cabal really, he just did some interviews and was like, all right, I'm back, bitch. Didn't cost me anything.
Totally.
Yeah, Cabal explains to Rufus why magic was superseded by science. Science can do it all much, so much cheaper, easier, and indeed faster.
Ba-blam, ba-blam, blam, blam.
Takes out his gun and proceeds to shoot Rufus dead.
Yes, our new leader, yells the army after Cabal kills Rufus. Yes. One thing, though, he called over his shoulder, there are some forms that will need filling in.
I love that.
You gotta laugh. Yeah.
Fully adopts them, but there's some paperwork.
Yes, you can be my minion. Sign here.
What's this damn knee part?
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Nothing to see there. Don't worry about it.
Your leader commands you not to read. Just sign. It's good. He's always got an eye for every opportunity.
Right? Well, mm-hmm. He's on a mission. It's only a year long. True. Like, he's got some work to do. And with, you know, Satan mucking around and what's to come in the next chapter.
Well...
He's on a limited time frame, mm-hmm. Only getting more limited by the day.
So this concludes our episode 3.7, Tempest Fugit. Thank you for listening. You can find us online at freeflowrambling.com and necromancers.ca. There we have links to other podcasts, social media, and other fun tidbits. Please subscribe if you like what you're hearing, and please consider supporting us through Patreon to keep the undead alive and to see more content. We are Free Flow Rambling, and remember... Reanimation is trending.